Well, Nintendo has once again gotten more money out of me. But not in a bad way. It's just they knew how to get me. So let me explain what happened. I really wanted to play some N64 games. And I got the thing where you get the expansion pass, and then you get to play some N64 games. And of course, I sat my 9-year-old down, and I was like, all right, sweetheart, you're going to play this game. Everybody say it all at the same time. The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time.
Yeah,
of course.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Now, here's my question, though, because that's not the first thing I think of when I think of the Nintendo 64. The thing I wanted to play was Star Fox 64.
Oh my goodness, I literally just had a huge conversation with my wife about how Star Fox 64 is a perfect fucking game.
It's a perfect game, dude. Okay, and I think the thing that really got me was I think that the first level, like the first place you go to, is such a perfect setup for the rest of the game. Because they teach you how to do everything, they get the banter in between the pilots, they have little secrets that you can do and stuff like that, and they just teach you how to do the whole game right there. And then from then on out, you know how to do it, and now you're just challenging yourself with like the different flying maneuvers and the different bosses and the different mechanics and how they mix them up. But like I sat there for like an hour and just played through the whole game like the night I got it, and it's like I was in middle school again. It was awesome.
It's such a good game.
God, that's a good game. Yeah. But so when I say N64, what's the game that pops into your mind? Because I wonder if it's different for everybody. I've always wondered this.
For me, you said Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask for me.
God damn it, Mark.
What's so funny is that Medley's been asking, like I will make her play Ocarina of Time. And then, when it's time for her to go to bed, she's like, can I watch you play Majora's Mask? And I'm like, no, because you're going to after you beat Ocarina of Time.
No, Majora's Mask is, in my opinion, the perfect Zelda game.
I love it. It's such a weird game.
Yeah.
But it, I don't know, just say, it's a wonderfully depressing game.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
I mean, for me, it's Super Smash Brothers. I mean,
Oh, yeah, of course.
I mean, the amount of times that I would spend whole summers just on Dreamland with 99 lives and 200% damage, and we would just see who died first.
Plus the sound effects in the first Super Smash Brothers, any punch, it just sounded like. I don't know, whatever objects they're using to make the sound effects, it just was perfect.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah.
Fun trivia about me. You know how, Tim, we used to bond over how we loved StarCraft, right? Because we were both StarCraft families. The first time I ever played StarCraft, by far, was StarCraft 64, not the computer game.
Wow.
StarCraft 64, I played that long before I ever played the computer game.
Oh my gosh.
I know, right?
I don't know what to think about that.
I saw that in a retro game store not that long ago, and they were selling it for $100.
What?
No way.
Yeah.
Used or, sealed?
Yeah, it was used, brother.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Hard used. All right. I've got one. Since Majora's Mask has been taken, I'm going to use the other multiplayer game other than Super Smash. How about Donkey Kong 64?
Hell yeah.
Dude, we played that game so much.
Donkey Kong 64 and Diddy Kong Racing were actually better than Mario 64 and Mario Kart.
Those games are fantastic. Facts. Gilly spitting facts right now.
Fantastic games. Don't get enough credit.
Yeah.
Yeah, mine is definitely Bomberman 64.
Oh my, dude!
Hold on, Tim. Bomberman Hero. I'm sorry, Bomberman Hero. Bomberman Hero. I clarify.
You want to unlock
Bomberman 64
some,
is very different.
You want to lock some core memories, Tim? Remember when my brothers and sisters were going to piano practice, and I'd come to your house because I was too young to play piano, and we would play Bomberman 64 multiplayer. I must have been 8 years old at the time.
Nice.
Legit, that was our childhood.
Mm. Oh, man.
That's, yeah. That's how many Tim. And I used to yell at Tim all the time. No, I'm kidding.
Bomberman Hero, like, the soundtrack for it, the composer, Jun Chikuma, like, amazing. Incredible. And I found out that the audio file size for that game was something crazy, like, 3 times larger than most video games allotted for music.
God, that's
that
funny.
Music is killer. Killer.
Dude, I remember, I don't know how real this is or that, like, how true this is, but I remember hearing somewhere that, like, the when you boot up, like, a Sega Genesis game and you hear the Sega, I remember hearing somewhere that the size of that audio file was, like, bigger than Sonic at the time or something insane like that. I don't know how true it was, but I was just like, that sounds crazy enough to be true.
I love that original Sega sound bit. It's
amazing. Yeah.
See, I'm going to throw another one out there that I know I played a shit ton with my one of my friends. It was GoldenEye 007.
Oh dude.
I wanted to say that one.
Yeah. The music for that went hard as fuck.
Oh, yeah. It's like that video of, like, hey, it's like that pause music. Yeah, you don't have to make it too crazy. And it's just like, they're just grooving to it.
I'm going to drop the biggest fucking bang you've ever heard. I was thinking about something because we had a friend named Brian Hobby who he lived 2 doors down from me, so I was over his house all the time to play the N64, and he had a bunch of games. But do you guys remember the Hey You Pikachu, where you would connect, like, the microphone into the controller, and then you could be like, Pikachu, go get the apple, Pikachu, do this, and like, I remember that, like, blew my goddamn mind when I was like, I can talk into the N64 controller? What? They were just going just completely ham. Like, they had so many more bits to work with, and they were like, we're gonna use them all. We're gonna use every single one of them.
Yeah.
God, do y'all remember using Game Shark with the N64? Like, the cartridge,
yeah.
And you took the cartridge.
No, because I'm not
top.
A piece of shit.
That was the best.
Not with the N64. The only time I ever had Game Shark used was on, like, a Game Boy game or something, and it was like someone at my church had it.
I legit did not even know Game Shark existed for N64.
It was like a black cartridge that you'd stick in, and then you'd put the N64 game cartridge on top of it. It had like a slot on top of the Game Shark.
Yeah,
and then you'd access all the cheats and then just enter the game.
Yeah,
that's nasty.
The Game Shark was like a bridge, essentially. Like the game you played had to pass through the Game Shark to work at all.
Mm.
Did it slow it down a lot?
I don't think it did. I mean,
I never noticed. Honestly.
Yeah. I wouldn't have noticed anything, but yeah. But oh my gosh, yeah. Finding out that, like, it was always like your friend's older brother that had a Game Shark, and you were like, "What? Go, do this?" And they would just, like, unlock some just, like, insane, like, game breaking thing, and it was, you know, it was like way before, like, any of that mattered.
Yeah, if you haven't, like, seen a picture of it, I just put it in the chat. It just looks so awkward, but
yeah,
that's
yeah.
what it looked like.
There it is.
Oh.
So cool.
Oh my gosh.
That's sick.
Thinking back to, like, I was trying to explain to Hannah the when we went into, we found that, like, retro game store recently, when we all went to the movies together, and they had some Sega Dreamcast stuff. And I was trying to tell Hannah about it, because the Sega Dreamcast had a thing where there was a little cartridge you could put into the controller itself, and it had various functions. But I remember one thing was that there were the tiny creatures in Sonic that you could, like, that you could save. It was, you know, the things you'd rescue, and you could put them. Yeah, you could put them into the little cartridge, and then take them out, and then it was pretty much like having a Tamagotchi.
Huh.
And I'm like, how is that not talked about more? That was, like, revolutionary as, like,
that's
a game system.
Sick.
Yeah, I think Sega just had, like, a great idea, but because they weren't as popular or didn't have, you know, like, the same kind of following that Nintendo and Sony PlayStation had, it just didn't catch on for some reason. And I'm like, that's such a shame, because I would love to do something like that now. Like, I don't know why that, like, didn't catch on as well as it did.
I mean, following that trajectory, we could have had real Pokemon by now.
Dude, A different timeline. We could have had Pokemon. And then Tim and Kelly, who are famously talking about their Nuzlocke challenges right now, would be able to do it in real life. listeners at home, I want you to know it's all they talk about right now.
Yeah, we're playing together.
I'm honestly
it's fun.
Still,
Mm-hmm, I know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm surprised we didn't talk about it when we hopped on the pre-podcast
yeah,
call.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to apologize after this because we're moving from Banta episode, but I forgot to do something very, very important last time. I'm going to be an honest GM and say, guys, I'm sorry I didn't tell you this, but you all leveled up.
Yes! Oh, man, best apology I've gotten in a long time.
I mean, I'll take it.
So now we are good players, and we make sure that we have like our level ups planned out. And so in Pathbuilder or whatever thing you use, if you're ever doing that, plan everything out, be a good player, and then when you level up, just go to the next one.
Exactly.
So you guys are what level now?
13, baby.
13, lucky number 13.
Highest level character I've ever played.
That's crazy. It only took 7 years.
I've never had 7th level spells before. Never cast one.
So that was my question, was does anybody want to talk about cool stuff that they have as a 13th level character?
Mm-hmm.
I know that I saw Tim and Mark tapping away before we got on, so I know that they were doing some stuff on their sheets. But is there anything you want to talk about openly and honestly, and allow me to plan for?
I will come clean, because I definitely think that you should have something churning in the back of your head
always.
So the easy stuff is, I am an expert in armor finally, which is kind of surprising for this class that it took so long.
Uh-huh.
Master in weapons. Never crit fail a will save ever again, period.
Oh, because if you crit fail, it goes to a regular fail?
Yes.
Oh, wow. That is good.
Never crit fail, which is amazing.
Oh, wait, what save is this?
It's called Greater Unassailable Soul.
So it's for will saves. Will saves. All right, so don't target Garns with will saves ever.
Yep. But the thing that you really have to start churning in your brain, which is especially relevant because of where we are, is I just got the feat March the Mines.
Okay.
Let me read it, because I want to read it because I want you guys to poke holes in it, because it seems completely broken, okay?
Okay.
So broken. All right. It's a two-action. You march through the earth and lead an ally along. You gain a burrow speed of 15 feet when you use this activity, if you don't have a higher one, and then you either stride twice or burrow twice. You can choose one willing ally adjacent to you at the start of your movement to move with you. The ally ends its movement one square behind you. There is no X amount of times per day. There is no, you can't chain these many actions one after the other. I can indefinitely burrow through the earth.
What's it called?
With an ally. It's called March the Mines.
I mean,
there's just nothing else about it except that it just says dwarf. Like, it doesn't say anything about it. it just seems so freaking broken.
Once again, just dwarf things.
Just dwarf things. when you were talking about, like, us hearing the thrumming on the earth below I'm just like, I'm just going to start digging.
I'm just going to dig to it.
See, Kelly's looking at it. He's got a very confused look on his face because he's trying to find something that would be like,
he does. He's wrinkling his forehead looking at it right now.
I could just do it.
You could just do it. This episode brought to you by Nike. Just do it.
Yeah, you can just move an ally.
I mean, yeah, and I think the thing, too, is that, like, because it's a two-action thing, I think that, like, it's if you use it in combat, you have to, like, you're only pretty much moving, like, that turn. You'll get one attack off, but you're not doing much else. So to be able to, like, grab Luca and, like, reposition with him would be very cool, but you could also do that to, like, get your spellcaster out of a situation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, is it's broken for exploration. Completely broken. Like we are in the ground right now.
Mm-hmm.
I just dig wherever I want to dig.
Yeah, I mean, it's hardened stone, so I think that comes down to, you know, if it's, like, worked stone, like, are you going to be able to, like, dig through that? Because, like, if you do it in dirt, obviously, but this is all either worked stone or, like, you know...
Yeah, burrow. Like, you dig your way through loose dirt, sand, or similar loose material at a rate to your burrow speed. So you can't necessarily burrow through rock unless you okay. Are okay, able yeah. to do so otherwise.
Yeah, yeah, it literally yeah. says you can't burrow through rock or other substances denser than dirt. Okay, well, that's the limit. There we go.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Okay, so, no, that's a good clarification, though, because if you guys come up to a point where there is some soft earth, I 100% guarantee I know what Tim's doing.
Oh my god. It's like, again, using a Pokemon to be like, there's some soft dirt here. Do you want to use Dig?
Dig. Dig go, now.
Go, Gard, go.
Go, Bidoof, go.
Okay, well, that's a good clarification. Not as broken as I thought it was. I didn't realize the qualifications for Burrow.
No, so, but that is nice. That is super cool.
But it so also, you can also just use it to stride.
Exactly, yeah. That's what I'm saying. And because it's a two-action thing, you're moving you and your friend around, but you're only
move an ally with
you. Yeah, it says you gain a burrow speed, and then you can choose to either stride twice or burrow twice with an ally with an adjacent ally. Oh, so you could just you could just run around with people. Like you could take two strides and take an ally with you anywhere you go.
Yeah, that's why I was saying that it would be good if your spellcasters like call it out of place to just like grab them and just like move.
Yeah,
them.
It's honestly honestly way more valuable for that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you pointed that out. That's why I read it.
I said it earlier, but I guess Kelly is cool with me.
I think my brain just like I need to hear something like 5 times because I've read this thing like 10 times and that did not soak in at all. Just completely smooth right here. All I saw was burrow, and I said I could go underground.
you're like I gotta dig.
See, this is what's gonna happen. Garn's gonna try it. He goes, guys, I can do this, and then doesn't do anything.
Just breaks his fingernails. Ah, God, shit.
Well, I've got obviously, you know, access to 7th level spells, which is huge. Wizard of Gates, which means I get another fun thing. I guess since I have no idea if we're ever going to use it at this point, interplanar teleport.
Jesus.
Interplanar teleport. Oh my.
Which I get just because I'm a Wizard of Gates.
Sick.
That's cool.
Also, Master of Arcana.
Yeah, that is the 7th rank spell. Look at that.
Oh my gosh.
Holy crap. Looking at this, I just pulled it up just to read this awesome spell. Although it takes 10 minutes to cast, so, you know, you got to do the symbol on the ground and everything.
Same thing with teleport. It's not instant.
Yeah, right, but right. Targets up to 8 willing creatures, which is awesome.
I would,
everybody hold hands.
Yeah, I would only say the other thing is that it says you have to use a magic planar key created from material from that plane, so...
It has the same thing where it's at the... Second paragraph, the spell is highly imprecise and you appear 1d20 times 25 miles from the last place one of the targets of your choice was located the last time that target traveled to the plane. So you end up somewhere. Do you guys remember in Dragon Ball Z when they brought back Piccolo on Namek?
And then bring
back Piccolo, and then fucking Shenron on Namek was like, all right, I'll bring him back, but he put him on, like, the other side of the planet like an asshole. It's just like, bro, we wanted him here. He's like, well, I did what I did. I did my job.
Did not specify that.
He was very genie-like in that way. He was kind of mean. All right, so now we gotta plan for that. All right, any other cool things before we get to this abandoned building?
I got a pretty sweet ancestry feat. So this is a tree off of my orc superstition feat, which is where I can use a reaction to gain a +1 to any save against a spell. This is called Spell Devourer. You don't just resist magic, you devour it. When you succeed at a saving throw against a spell or magical effect, you gain temporary hit points equal to double the spell rank, or equal to the level of the magical effect if it isn't a spell. These temporary hit points last until the end of your next turn. And this is not tied to the reaction either. So this is any spell I get a save on. Any spell that I successfully save, I get double the spell level and 10 hit points.
Well, goddamn.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah. So
it's, okay.
So yeah, it's that's an awesome orc feat, and it's perfect for Kezra.
Oh, definitely. Like, yeah, for me, I picked ancestry feat. I'm just gonna say it. Due to my Nephilim background, I get something called slip sideways. So, like many fiends, you have supernatural ability to teleport yourself to safety. So, once per day, I can cast translocate as a fifth rank.
I love it.
As a fifth rank divine innate spell. So I could, and now that I have the Cloak of the Mont back, and this,
oh my gosh,
I at least have two teleport, like any teleports that I can work with. But then I was looking at it, since it's like at fifth level, it's heightened, I think. So it's a lot further.
Okay.
Yeah, so like I could be like, oh, I need to get back. Boom, done.
Yeah, translocate's a mile when it's heightened.
Yes. But besides that, defensive capabilities went up. Eidolon, Luka got stronger.
He's
a plus 26 to hit now. And honestly, fun spells. I can now summon level 9 creatures as well.
Oh god. Okay. All right.
Yeah, translocate. Yeah, it increases to 1 mile, and you don't need to see where you're going anymore. You just have to have been there in the past.
Oh jeez.
Yeah, so you can.
Oh yeah,
you can
so
just, like, fucking blink so to wherever.
Yeah, you so you could just yeah like. When they all die, you can just go back to Kovlar.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. Easy way out.
Yep. So, well, now I have some things to try to combat here. as a GM, it's always fun learning your cool new things and then going, what the hell am I
going to
do?
Well, it's just shit going, everyone knows how to do planar lock now. It's weird.
Yeah, right. your typical run-of-the-mill guard and ghouls all do planar lock. All right. So at the very end of last episode, you guys had... you were tuned in to this thrumming, this rhythm, and you guys have followed it. And you could sort of sense where it was coming from, and you kept on this trail. And as you got to where you were sort of sensing it more and more, you started to hear voices. And then all of a sudden, they stopped just outside of what is clearly an old... abandoned tavern or inn or something like that. Just from the outside, you can tell this thing did have a fire that happened to it at some point, and it just looks like it has just gone into disarray ever since. But the sound that you were hearing, that you were tuned into so keenly, led you here. What do you guys want to do?
What's the... is the sign still there with the name of the building?
It is faded mostly. Let me pull up fantasynamegenerators.com. This episode brought to you by
fantasynamegenerators.com. it's actually Black Oak Workshop, where dice are treasure.
So you see. I love fantasy name generators because they come up with absolute bangers like the impolite ore pub. just an ingot with a real attitude. but so the like I said, it is just gone into disarray. If you want to roll local on it, you're more than welcome to do that. Sandor especially, because you've been living here for a little while.
All right.
Sandor, tell me, what happened to this place? What terrible fate befell it that our sensibilities and our detection of vibes has brought us here?
Our detection of vibes.
Hold on. Where's my character sheet?
Oh, I don't have my dice out.
Yes, everybody, blame Kelly.
Kelly, it's all your fault.
There are two things we can count on. I think, like, every other episode is either Kelly forgot dice or John's where's my character
sheet. Wait, yeah, well, my character sheet. I closed it. Send up a gun.
Yeah. falling on the floor.
Leave it where it lies.
Wait, that's six rolls of bad luck if they fall on the floor.
I am having a time finding a local. Hold on.
Society.
It's just society.
Is what it is.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I was shifting back to 20 for a second.
Tim, give me 18 plus 19.
That is 37.
37.
Yeah. So, you recall that this place was the ages ago. It had been found to have been cursed in some way. Like, there was the rumors all about that. And the thing that it seemed to be cursed by was that, like, things would drop constantly, fires would start, and then they would put them out, and, you know, and then it would carry on. But, like, over the years, it kept happening so much. And then, eventually, one day, after it had been abandoned, a fire started somehow inside of it. They never found any evidence of anyone being inside. It didn't appear to be arson. It just looked like it just happened. Luckily, they were able to put it out, but they do not go in here. There's, like, bad juju, and they just don't want to deal with it. And so something has led you here. Gosh. To the supposed cursed tavern.
Ugh. A cursed tavern in a cursed city. And...
yeah.
Well, fear not. I have been blessed by the gods to deal with this very, very thing. You see, during my time serving in my regiment, I was the lead war priest. So praying away evil curses is kind of my thing.
It's kind of my deal.
So, oh, Gorham, please grant us safe passage that we may battle not against haunts and spirits, but against flesh and blood as the gods willed it since the beginning of time. Not that these incorporeal beings should be faced with us, but should be belong to their rightful place in the River of Souls. I know that you hear me. And he tries to cast, I think it's called, like, True Sight, where it's like you can see kind of ghosts and stuff like that.
Right. Okay.
But it doesn't work.
Oh.
And he kind of looks maybe perhaps at Sandor, and he's like, do my eyes look glowy at all, or pale white, opaque?
No.
Hmm.
What do you see with your dwarven eyes?
I see. Seems that Gorham has abandoned me today. As if this is the second or third time that I've tried to access my divine magics, but nothing. Nothing. I must pray on this.
Because you're like, I got this one, old man. And he casts see the Unseen on himself.
Sick.
Yes, see, like that. That's what it should look like. Exactly like that.
My eyes should look like his. Okay, so you cast this over your eyes, and you're able to sort of, like, be tuned in. And there is a sort of, like, there's a sort of, like, energy sort of floating about it. If you've ever seen, like, Jujutsu Kaisen, the, like, curse energy, there's, like, that there is just this, like, vague feeling, and it's sort of manifesting your vision. So it's very, very faint, but it's like, yeah, there's something about this place that has just made people so uneasy that maybe it's, like, manifested itself by, like, people's fear. Like, because it's so old, it's kind of, like, lost the time.
Wait, hold on, Jake. Is this just some elaborate ruse so you can get us to drop all of our potions and they'll all crash and break? You're like, you got that potion 3 books ago. You don't need it. You don't need it anymore. It's broken.
As you trip, you land on your hip and you hear a bunch of potions crunch at once.
What's the old joke? An Irishman goes out for a friend, and in the midst of the bog, he trips and falls, and he hears a crash, and he looks in his pocket, pulls out a bottle of whiskey, and says, "Thank God, it's only blood."
Yeah. God, that's good. Oh, God. All right. You go to the front door of this tavern. It's a two-story deal, so it looks like there might have been some rooms up top, or maybe like an office or something like that. It's all been mostly cleared out. There's probably a few broken bits of furniture, you know, teenagers coming in here doing dumb shit. What do you guys want to do?
Is there only one way in? Just the main front door?
Yeah, that's what's kind of curious.
If you go around the back, there's a back door that was used to, you know, bring in food, take out trash, stuff like that.
I can get up to the second level if you want, or we can go in all together.
Kezra, with your all-seeing eyes, is the emanation coming from below or is it coming from above?
Seems like this whole place is shrouded in some form of darkness, but it's very indiscernible from out here. I don't think it's a bad idea to check out the upper floors.
Well, Sandor, you said you can get up there. Let's see what you can do.
Okay, hold on. I need to see if I upcast this, will it work for multiple people?
Juicy. Can he share the love?
Can I?
Kezra can also cast his dragon wings, so...
yeah, alright. So if I upcast this, it only increases the duration. Doesn't say anything about multiple people. So I'm casting Gecko Grip on myself.
Neat.
Cool.
So I can.
Oh, this was the old spider climb.
It's spider climb, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Legally distinct from the dragon game. So you cast this and you're able to get a good grip onto the side and you're able to scale it, no problem.
Yep.
So as you're like scaling the wall, he kind of like looks, kind of like gives a nod at Sandor to like Kezra. You know, about five years ago, all the hot new dwarves were using this thing called Spider Climb, but they have since abandoned that. Now it's this newfangled thing called Gecko Grip.
You want to get sued, old man?
Far improved in my mind. The other one's stupid. I don't know why you would call it that.
Geckos are cooler than spiders, I think. Do you guys watch Game Changer at all?
Oh, yeah.
Is that a Dropout TV thing or something?
Yeah, it's Dropout, yeah. Wow. They had an episode recently that was like, they had to push the legal limit of like, the stuff they were saying, and it was hilarious because they brought lawyers onto the show and they had like a gauge and like, dude, it was so funny.
That's fine.
Like, it was good. It's a great show. Alright, so let's go with you first, Sandor. So you climb up the side and you get to the first window. You peer over and you can see that this is where a fire had started. It looks like there were four rooms up here that looked to be pretty big. So maybe looking at some of the tools, looks like one of them was maybe like a preparation room for some food perhaps, or maybe just like a workshop of some kind. Another one appeared to be a sort of like living quarters. You can tell just from like an old bed. And then the last one looks to be where the fire started, so you're not too sure what that was. But the walls themselves have the angle that you're at, you can see because the fire that happened here last burned down those walls before they put it out. So you're able to see into all those rooms. But it does not appear, you don't see anything moving in here. Just, it's unnervingly empty.
All right. I communicate this to everybody. And I will go from the wall to the inside of the building.
Okay. While he is searching up top, what is everybody else doing?
Probably inspecting around the base of it. Because if he's like looking up there, like, is this, I don't know if I missed it, but for this structure, is it like against a wall or is it like just by itself?
Oh, it's standalone. Yeah. It's in like a block. You know.
I'm just taking a look around it.
Sure. Okay. Go ahead and go and roll me perception as you're looking around on the outside.
So I think while other people are inspecting, I think Garn is kind of like standing at the ready, waiting for like, I don't know, someone to try to jump us. So he's got sword and board out.
Okay.
Mace and brace out.
There it is.
I had a 30 perception.
Okay. So a 30 perception. So you go around, you can see that there's a few windows. There's a small box that they would, you know, keep firewood in and stuff like that. You know, the things to help keep the coal or the stove running and things like that. You do come across what appears to be it wouldn't be a storm door or, you know, like a cellar door, not necessarily like in Kansas for like tornadoes, but it looks like a way into a basement.
Creepy.
Oh, wonderful. There seems to be some doorway leading down here. And, locked? Or is it?
There was a lock on here. It has since rusted and is not useful anymore. So if you touch it, it pretty much just falls apart.
Is there rain a lot in here?
No.
Humidity. That'll do it.
There it is.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a freaking lake under here. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Inspecting around it, doesn't look like there's footsteps going in and out.
No. Uh-huh. You don't see any indications of people moving in or out of this place.
I know. Just like not wanting to just bust open the door here, leading into a basement.
What a party, people!
Boom. Kezra, are you to inspect the first floor?
I say we just go in.
I'll have your back then.
All right, Kezra then is going to do exactly that, and he's just going to kick the door open. he will open it quietly. He's not going to make a huge noise.
It falls off the hinges anyway.
Okay. Kezra kicks the door.
Yeah.
As he said, Kezra kicks the door open. Carefully.
I nudge it open with my toe.
Very gently. Kick the door open very hard.
Big toe.
With the door open, you're able to look inside. The light sort of pours into this place. It's covered in cobwebs. Any wood that has been here is just sort of like rotted away. Some chairs have fallen apart. It looks like some things were deliberately broken. But for the most part, you don't see any signs of people moving about in here. It's like, as I said, unnervingly still.
Yeah. I still have CDM scene on, and I also am detecting magic, and I'm just going to move into the place. If there's anywhere to if there are any like sconces or torches on the walls or anything, I'm just going to light them all up, light this place up.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean,
to the ground again.
Just keep that. That.
The flames engulf the whole place, and then people nearby go, "Dang it! Here's the 10 gold."
Can't be a problem if it's all on fire.
It's a 50-year-old bit. They ignite the cobwebs and stuff get swallowed up by the flames and the torch sconces. If you want to look around, you can roll perception checks in here, just to see what other things you can see.
Yeah, so Garn actually has, now that we're in here and it's like an old tavern and stuff, he remembered an old dwarvish tavern tradition, is that they typically hide some of the best liquor under a floorboard behind the bar, so he's going to see if that's still there.
Oh, okay. All right, so you want to roll perception for that?
Uh-huh.
All right, go ahead.
Come on, guard. 18 on the die. God knows how this works. 38.
Let me see. I'm pulling up for the looting. Yeah, for stealing stuff.
I mean, it's like all these dwarven kids who are probably in here don't know about the secret. It's an age-old tradition. This seems like an old building, but have kept the old ways.
Let's say you find a bottle of something. It is it's unlabeled. It's unmarked.
Oh, even better.
I know it's good. It's sealed. It's okay. Got like a wax seal on it. Nice. You know what I mean? It seems to be something pretty good enough to keep in here. Maybe it was like homebrewed, perhaps.
Yeah. So Garn just picks up and is like, "Ha, see? Yes, we shall be telling tales around the fire with one sip of this. I can be sure of it. I'll keep this for later.
Let's go."
Okay. All right. Cool. All right. I have what it is for when you when you inevitably drink it.
Starts belching fire.
Oh, I can't stop.
It's actually just a jar of wyvern poison.
Oh gosh.
It burns.
Well, we don't know until I drink it all.
I don't feel so good, Dr. Sandor. all right. Gezri, you were doing a perception up here.
Yeah, I only got a 24.
Okay.
I used the good roll on finding the liquor.
I'm finding liquor. All right. So you look around. The only thing that you do see is there's a door to that sort of goes towards the back. So it's like there's the main area out front. Where you know all the patrons would be, and then the kitchen in the back where they would prepare food or drinks or whatever. And then there's a door in that hallway that appears to be cracked open.
I'll head for the cracked open door.
Okay. As you approach it, you hear a bit of an echo, and so if you look in with the light, you can see that it's a spiral stairway that goes downward.
Ooh. Oh, maybe to the basement.
Looks like this way goes down into your basement there.
Oh.
Sandor! We found something.
Sandor is upstairs currently, and he's also using Detect Magic, and he also just rolled a perception check for a 37.
Oh, man.
Okay. So as you look around here, You don't find the footprints of like people, but you do see it looks like some creatures have perhaps skittered about here. So you being a native to this area, you know that it's just like whatever the Darklands equivalent of like an alley cat or something like that would be. So you're not too on edge. You feel like it, maybe the curse here was probably a little hyped up from the locals. But hearing that hearing that there's a basement, you guys feel that is the last thing you guys have not looked at yet.
Then Sandor will make his way downstairs, seeing that there's quite literally nothing up here.
Okay. Yeah. Ambrose is outside at the door, has it open to go into the basement. Like Luca just kind of pushes it out. And they both walk down.
Okay. You all make your way into the basement. There are rows of barrels of what was used for fermenting the drinks and, you know, making whatever thing they were doing down here. Go ahead and roll me a perception check while you're down here. You couldn't see anything from the outside, so this is a bit harder to see without the light that you had.
Right. 35 here.
Kezra has his wayfinder light.
Oh, okay. All right, good. Cute. Okay. That'll certainly help you guys then, for those of you without dark vision.
Turn that damn thing off.
Wait, what was that?
What'd you get again, Ambrose?
35.
Yeah, same here.
Hey, there you go.
Oh, nice.
They did better than me with a 35.
Okay. So while you guys are walking around, Kezzer, I imagine you're looking at the different barrels, seeing what they were making. You see it's all, just a lot of dwarven ales and whiskeys that they were brewing here.
Yeah, I got it.
But as you are using the Wayfinder and shining it, both Ambrose and Garn at the same time look at a part, like the edge of where the wall meets the ground at a certain point, and you can see a footprint in the dust. It's extremely slight, but it's enough that you're like, why is there one footprint right here?
Oh, that is particular.
A boot?
The humanoid footprint.
Yes, bring the light over here.
Yeah, if Kezzer comes over to investigate.
Shining the light on it, you can see that the footprint is unmistakable from like the rest of the dust that's just around. And with the light now, and the 35 that you had already rolled, you can see that there is some sort of scratch in the floor as well.
Hmm.
Would a thievery check help here?
To look for anything out of the ordinary? Yes. In this?
Yeah, like, is there a trap door?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was just going to ask if crafting would be useful.
Oh.
Yeah, if you want to roll crafting as well, just kind of look at the wall here.
36 thievery. Yes.
37.
Oh, shit.
So, Kezzer, you go over to the wall and you're looking at the scratches and you sort of follow it up and there's a single stone that as you put your hand up, there's a little bit of a give to it. And you twist the stone and the way that it moves is it moves itself out of the way of a clear door that as you move that, the door just sort of like kind of pops itself open.
Kezzer just like grabs the edge of the door and just pulls it all the way, scraping across the stone.
I've had something like this in one of my parents' castle. It was a nice way of getting out of trouble in some ways, but this seems a little bit more intricate.
You would, fancy boy. All right, let's get down there.
Does it look like it is a part of the original structure or newly installed?
With the crafting check, I would say it looks built outside of that, because if it looks like that, maybe it's made to look like that. But you're like, there's no reason why these tavern owners would have like made this. Hmm. And the reason being is because as you open the door up, it opens up 10 feet wide.
Whoa.
And it's a staircase that just goes down far.
Oh.
Sweet.
So I know that you have low light vision. How far does your vision go, Kezzer?
I mean, with the Wayfinder, it's 20 feet of bright light and 20 feet of dim light after that.
Okay, so you cannot see the bottom.
Just descends into darkness until the light fades.
What about the dwarves? What about the dwarves? What do we see?
The dwarves are looking at a, let's say, around 80-foot staircase. Just goes steeply down.
Kezzer, let me go first.
After you.
And I second.
Because Sandor believes this is leading to the corruption that was beneath the seal on the wall.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yep.
Oh, yeah,
well,
yeah,
okay.
Maybe not. But Sandor is very... Sandor has tools that help him here.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay, so marching order was Sandor first. It's 10 foot wide. See, you guys can
two and hold, two.
Yeah, two and two. Okay.
Holy yep. man, on my side.
And okay. Garn trots so up.
Two dwarves are holding hands. Kezra and Ambrose are holding hands. And
Luca's taking up the rear. He also has a torch, just in case.
Oh right. Okay. Yeah. Yep. I think I had it on him in one combat. Yeah, but I would have to reapply that.
That works.
Yeah. Let me see. With Foundry Virtual Tabletop, I can do that. I can do 20. It's 20 bright, 20 dim, I believe, if I remember correctly. Okay. All right. I'm going to pull you over to the map.
Yay! I was hoping. Yay. I was hoping.
Finally. You guys walk for 80 feet down this steep staircase until you come out. So you guys aren't in the room yet. I just have you positioned there just because you have so many dang tokens. Luca. As you continue to go down, you hear what sounds like banging and clanging, and what sounds like a fire.
Oh.
And it progressively gets deeper, louder as you continue down. A staircase descends into an archway on the north side of this room. So you come in from the north. Opposite this archway, in the south wall, sits a solid stone door, above which a brief message has been chiseled. I know three of you can read Dwarven, so I'll just tell you, it just says, "Profess the faith."
That's nice.
Oh.
You can't read it, Kelly.
We didn't tell you.
I don't think
friend I read and enter.
It says, "Live, laugh, and love."
I will slowly move forward.
Okay. As you walk into the room, you see that as you walk out of the staircase into the room, there are two statues flanked on either side, and they appear to be of, statues of dwarves with, giant hammers, and they appear to just be standing there with their hands sort of clasped over the pommel of the hammer, and they're just standing there diligently.
So
giant stone door, and it just says, "Profess the faith."
Profess the faith.
Can I make a religion check to specify what specific faith they are looking for here?
Go ahead.
Can I roll? Go ahead and do a religion check. Can I roll knowledge dwarf for?
I would say that all of this feels very dwarven. So yeah, you can go ahead and roll for dwarven lore specifically here.
Garn's gonna try to roll religion because he is a man of the chainmailed cloth.
Well, Tim, can you do me a favor here? Give me a 15 plus a 23.
That's a 38. Sheesh. And I got a 32.
So a lot of the stuff in here, it feels very daunting and intimidating. But you don't see any iconography depicting anything about, one, Droskar, which is probably the first thing that you're thinking of.
That's fair.
But also you don't see anything about Torag either.
Yeah.
So it just feels like this is here to just sort of like make you like think about like maybe you have to speak a password, maybe you have to be able to read that in the first place. The way you're looking at it, it's like it feels like there's just some sort of like test here.
Yeah. And it says speak the faith.
Profess the faith.
Profess the faith.
Could
Sandor, I'll be quite frank with you.
Oh wait, sorry. Hold on. One second. What was your total again?
Whose?
Yours, your John.
38.
Okay. That is a critical success, actually.
Oh.
Which is enough to know that that is a recognized phrase as an aphorism?
Yeah.
Used by worshippers of Droskar.
Oh, fuck.
Professor.
Would Sandor then know the proper response to that?
Yeah, so when you come down here and you look at that and you look at the two statues, you know that you have to say the line, but this has always been a test of faith, so it's like it's almost like they're looking to see if you're saying it with the gusto that Droskar is looking for. That's how you've always read it. And you've always been kind of like, I don't ever want to say it because I'm always going to get in trouble because, you know, I don't really fuck with that. But you're like, okay, so we got to believe it when we say it. Like, that's how it's always felt for you whenever you've come across this kind of thing in Droskar worship.
Okay. Sandor will say the line with all the gusto in his heart, even though it makes him sick.
So you swallow down some vomit that was coming up as you go to say the line, and you say it in the deep, ancient dwarven tongue that you speak. And you just say, I profess the faith. And you hear a chk in the stone door on the other side.
Sandor doesn't even want to spend a second in front of these statues. He quite literally runs to open the door.
Okay.
Yeah.
You guys make your way to the other side. Like I said, it's a giant 10-foot-wide stone door down here on the other side of the room. Can you guys open up those doors? Can you open that up?
No. Or, well, I guess if you're adjacent to it, you can.
Yep. I can. Okay. If you're, okay. All right. So as you get into this room, so no, don't go in yet. the air in this room is unusually warm and laced with the stink of unwashed bodies. Have you ever been to an anime convention? You know what I'm talking about.
Or a Magic the Gathering tournament.
Or Magic the Gathering tournament. several doors provide exits, with a single door to the south hanging open, through which the sound of machinery grinding can be heard. Ooh. So that sound is much, much clearer now as you get in. However, there are three figures in this room talking amongst themselves. I am going to reveal all of them to you.
Hey!
Oh,
I recognize that.
One of them looks like this.
Triad.
Yeah. She is clearly a Scarlet Triad member. She has a whole leather outfit. She has this like sick looking rapier, the classic manacles with the Scarlet Triad symbol etched in on the side. And she looks like she has a blowgun and some poison on her waist. Then you see a somewhat recently familiar face.
Oh, that guy.
Of Brigvin.
Oh, look at the guy. Careful, he's got a short sword.
And then you see... Ooh. This guy.
Scary dwarf.
This... That's a Hringar.
That's a Hringar.
That is a Hringar. The Hringar turns to Brigvin and says, "You fool! You said you weren't followed." And Brigvin goes, "I was sure I wasn't. They were fools." And he goes, "Kill them! Please roll initiative."
Yes, let's go.
Can I use knowledge dwarf? There's two here.
I'm going to use religion because that's what I was doing before combat.
Fair.
Oh my goodness, I accidentally clicked on Benson's sheet. Rip.
Whoops.
Rip. Wait, is Benson dead?
He's not with us anymore.
Wake up, he's gone. All right, let me go ahead and roll for each of these.
Oh, shit, I'm rolling Kelly numbers on my initiative right now.
Yeah, whoa. Same.
Okay. Going down the list, Ambrose.
Okay, so in this case, Ambrose sees the Scarlet Triad person, and he gets pissed, like, right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And he calls them out specifically. And he's just going, Scarlet Triad, I will make sure your death is an unpleasant one. And he is going to roll Intimidation as Battle Cry.
Oh.
Hell yeah.
Okay.
Let's fucking go, Ambrose.
And I will say, I told John how high his intimidation is.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That is a 42.
Ooh, let's fucking go.
He is a plus 26 to intimidation.
Oh my god. Dude, so I legit am sorry Benson is not here to see this.
Oh my god. Okay, so frightened too.
Yes.
Okay, and then, so this is going to... Okay, so, what? Oh, with your initiative.
It's with Intimidation, right?
I mean, so, you didn't know what was behind this door, so it would just be Perception, unless you were doing some other exploration activity.
Oh, okay, yep. Well, I guess,
you still get the Intimidate... Anyway,
well, it says when you roll initiative, you can yell mighty battle cry and demoralize. If you're legendary intimidation, you can use reaction to demoralize your foe.
Yeah, so it just gives you the chance to intimidate with your initiative.
Got it.
I made that mistake multiple times with my
yes.
My never mind then. No, well, shit, for the hell of it, that was a natural 20.
Oh, okay,
so God, 39. Damn.
Dude, 39. Ambrose is not fucking around.
Oh no!
Yeah, I think he
sees blood right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. Okay. Sandor, it's your turn.
Sandor got a 21 with a 10 on the die.
Okay. There you go. Those are Kessler numbers.
Yes, it is.
Speaking of Kessler,
25.
See. Kessler numbers.
Yep.
Garn.
25.
real Kezra-ing it up today, aren't we?
No, we're strategically waiting for them to advance upon us.
Okay. So, initiative has started. The Hringar is going first.
Fuck! In front of...
Not good.
Oh, no.
He is going to... Okay. First, he goes, "Fool, I'll have your head when we're done with them." And then he goes invisible.
Oh.
Wait! Kessler's got the shiny ass!
I got shiny ass.
Yeah. And then he takes a step to the southeast. So, Kessler, you would see that. So wherever he was. I guess since you can see him, I will just reveal him. But
you're like,
I wish I could make him invisible to like everybody but Kessler. But
I thought Sander also used See the Unseen as well. Or no,
I have not used it yet.
I thought he used it.
Okay, but so he is I know I'm going to forget, so I will make him invisible, and then I'll just tell you, Kelly, whenever he moves. Okay. But that is what he does. Next, it comes to the Scarlet Triad member, who is frightened. And she just goes, "No! What? How are they here?" And she is going to...
Not so fun to go first, is it, Jake?
No, it's not. she will look at Sandor, take out her blowgun, and go floop, and try to snipe you with it.
Does she load it?
They're all preloaded. Okay. there's a 34 to hit.
Oh, 34 to hit. That's going to hit.
Okay. So take 7 piercing damage.
All right.
Roll me 2 fortitude saves.
Oh, Jesus.
2 fortitude saves. Not one, but 2?
2.
2 for the price of 1 Darge?
That's right, baby.
First one's 35.
Okay, so that is going to be... Yeah, that'll be a success on that. Yep. Okay, and then the second one?
Second one is 33.
That is a fail.
Oh.
Sorry. I was looking at the number. No, not the DC. So you're fine, actually. Sorry. So I was looking at her attack, and I don't know why I mixed that up. Okay, so you're able to shake that off. So there was one action to pull that out, one action to do that. And she doesn't have any other... she pushes Brigvin toward and then takes a step back herself. And then she's like, Brigvin, deal with them! This is your fault! It seems like... Brigvin is getting bullied, even by the Scarlet Triad.
When you're that pathetic, I mean, come on.
Okay, so that is the end of her turn. Ambrose, comes to you.
Oh, so he's seeing red. And right now, Kezra can definitely see this, that his eyes kind of shift black for a moment. And he is summoning a powerful creature to the field. He is going to use a level 7 spell of summon undead.
Whip it out and flop it on the table, my man.
Jay, can you put that one badass guy that you liked?
Was it the...
The one on the right.
The one with the purple one?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
And put him right here.
Right in front of the Scarlet Triad member.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
So
let me.
Oh,
let me,
who the fuck is this?
Let me show this to everybody.
Cool. So
you just summoned a ring wraith.
Yes.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Well, a personalized ring wraith. Yeah. As he says, I have a friend. I have a friend for you to play with. Commander Gretel, get them. And and this is a war wraith.
Oh, and, sick. I was making a joke. I didn't realize it was an actual wraith.
It's a wraith, because he summoned another wraith beforehand. It was just like a large one.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a war wraith. And also, since you're all within 10 feet, can you all make fortitude saves?
Oh my gosh.
Because you are in his draining presence.
Oh god. So the Scarlet Triad member went first. 20.
Drained one.
Oh no.
Holy shit.
Oh no.
This thing is potent.
Okay. Alright, Brigvin, you gonna do something cool for once in your life, maybe?
No.
Probably not. let's see. Fortitude for you. 36.
Okay, so he's fine.
Okay, he's fine.
All right.
And then...
So he did one cool thing.
He did one.
Why are you afraid? What the...
He's like, no, Wraith. No.
and then the Hrengar secretly got a 34.
Okay, so they're fine. The one is drained one, which drained is one. The... is it the one that shot the blow dart?
Yes.
Oh, and so he's going to immediately use, the abilities on this thing is just stupid. Something called Grip of Fear.
Oh, no!
it reaches into an adjacent creature's chest, gripping its heart. It takes 9d6 mental damage with a DC 20 basic will save.
Okay.
God damn!
I am trying to think here. Do I have to roll for... I assume I have to roll... No, it's an ability.
I was gonna say, yeah. If it's an ability, it would usually say make an attack.
Yeah, or something. Yeah. No, like this is just straight up saying it reaches into adjacent creature's chest, gripping its heart.
Okay, so will save them.
Yeah, DC 28.
Natural one.
Let's fucking go, dude. Ambrose is going for fucking blood.
Oh my god,
brutal.
God, this is so many dice. Oh my god.
Oh no.
I will say,
she's already drained one, so her HP immediately went down.
And so here it is. Target takes 9d6 mental damage, and on a crit failure is paralyzed until end of the Wraith's next turn.
Oh my god, okay.
So, let me get my dice roller out because, oh my god, I'm not rolling that many.
I love this because, like, it's called, grip of fear, so I just imagine the Scarlet Triad is so gripped with fear that their heart literally, like,
stops. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, just...
96, hold on. 96.
Whew.
This is so freaking
cool. Oh, yeah, no, he is grinning that the fact that this is even working...
I mean, and she's already frightened one, so I mean,
yeah.
So, come on, fucking roll.
it's so many dice.
This is also doubled because it's a crit fail.
Oh my
god.
Wow. Oh, because it was a basic save. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that would be 62 points of damage. And the creature is also paralyzed until the start of the Wraith's next turn.
Until the end of her natural life.
Yes.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
So that is, add this up, folks. Frightened one, drained one, paralyzed, and because she is paralyzed, she is also off guard.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and...
So that AC looking. Well, that's a... Yeah, that AC sucks, I'll tell you that much. Okay.
And Luca is going to move up. Well, actually, he's going to move off to the side as his action.
Okay.
Yeah, I will say... Don't get in the aura, because you'll have to also roll. It does not differentiate.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. All right. It comes to Brigvin's turn. Brigvin, he's just like, I can't take all them. You take for them. I'll help her. Is going to try and attack with his short sword.
Okay.
On the war wraith here.
Is it magical?
Yeah. So let's go ahead and see. 39 to hit.
Let me see. That's a crit. So he actually did good. I'm shocked.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Turns out he was good at stabbing. Just not making him. 18 points of piercing damage.
That's doubled.
I did not hit crit.
I was about to say, I was like, holy shit.
No, so...
I was cheering him on for a second, I was like, holy shit.
So, 36 then.
It's 26. Resistance, all damage.
Because we're resistant, yep, okay.
Ghost touch, spirit, vitality, and force.
Okay. And then he is going to... He stabbed once. Does he have anything else that he could do to... Okay. That's not going to work. All right. What he'll do is he will look over at... Who's over here? Sandor and...
Gon.
Yeah, you're right there. He sees you, Sandor. And after he stabs, he turns around and I think he notices who you are, and he's like, "What? No, you lied to me. Leave now!" And I need you to make a will save.
Okay.
Oh, what? A will save?
All right. Well, Sandor rolls a 30.
Four, 34. So that is a success. He did just try to cast fear on you. You're only frightened one.
Okay.
So, but that was his turn. Let me do. I always forget I can pop out the encounter tracker, which should be better at this game. It comes to Garn.
Alright, so... Garn... Not quite the what he was hoping for. He's hoping they would come to them. But he gives a curt nod to Sandor, and he just calls out, "I'm going in." And he knows that he's gonna have to contend with the aura. But you know, such is the life of a war priest. So Garn trots forward. I'm decent at 42.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
Yeah. So I trot forward here with my first action, and you know what?
You would have to make the save right away because it says when you enter the aura. Yeah.
Yep. And I think I will. Yeah, I'll just do the one action. Okay. So one action for that. I'll make the save. Oh boy, I don't know if I'm gonna make it. 30.
You got it. Oh, yeah, you are immune for 24 hours.
Heck yeah. Okay, yeah. So feeling a bit emboldened, he just gets right up to Brigvin, and he says, "I knew you were a coward when I saw you in your shop, but I'm glad you will die like a man." And he strikes out with the Morning Star. Ooh, I forgot. So, as you guys know, Garn is not in his future mind right now. He is in his War Priest mind. Mm-hmm. So, he doesn't have any of his War Priest abilities, but I have this fun little mechanic where I'm going to randomly shift the eminence to one of my three icons to see what it's going to be.
Okay.
So, thankfully, it is in the Titan's Breaker. And if I roll and I hit, then I'm going to randomly spark Transcendence on one of my Titan's Breaker icon. On my Titan's Breaker icon. So let's see what happens. Oh, it was on the 20!
Oh no.
It was on the 20!
And it moved to?
And it moved to an 8 for a 34?
For a 34 against him.
Flat-footed,
that's a hit.
He's
better than I thought. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so now let's see what he is going to... What he's going to do. So I have that one, and... Alright, okay. So let me roll another d6, because I have three abilities that it could use.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so a 4. So that would be the middle... ability. Oh, the middle ability is not something that I don't think I've actually used before, so this should be fun.
What do you got cooking over there?
What do I got cooking? I got this thing, it's called... Okay, I was literally just on it. Come on now. There it is. Through the Needle's Eye. So my Morningstar is actually gonna do a piercing damage.
Okay.
And when I strike, I need him to make a fortitude save.
Okay.
And I will get my damage going.
35 on the fort.
Okay, you make it. So, although blood starts to pour into your eyes, it doesn't pour directly into your eyes, so you do not become blinded.
Oh.
But it could have gone a little differently.
Yeah, that could have been real bad. Okay.
Mm-hmm. 15. So that is going to be 20 points of piercing damage.
Okay.
And so then I sparked Transcendence, so I'm going to actually have him roll a will save to see if he becomes scared by the brilliant Transcendence.
Okay, so will save then?
Yep.
Alright, Brigvin. Can you do it? No! Fail!
Yes!
Alright, so he's Frightened 1 now?
Frightened 1, as he's not exactly sure what this guy is doing, but it's some freaky stuff.
So, I mean, he's probably having the questioning of faith, because, he thought Sandor was some sort of sign from Droskar, and now he's here trying to kill him. So... Okay, is that everything for you?
Yep. One action move, two action for my ability.
Got it. Sandor, your turn?
No, it's my turn. I'm not. I'm
yeah, like I was about to say, Kelly goes before me.
Oh, what? Oh.
I had 25 as well.
No, I took Kezra out of the fight because I thought we didn't need him.
All right, so Kezra is 25. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
You don't want me to sit out? So much fun.
Okay, so then, all right, so there we go. All right, now it's Kezra's turn.
All right, so I see the dwarf, the Hringar. Where is he? Here?
He is down here. Yep. So he's like 10 feet away to the east of the wraith that is there now.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. This whole time, I still don't know what I want to do. damn, that's a 42 save. You know what? I don't care. All right, I want to do a 7th level spell too, just because I want.
Yay!
Bring him out.
So Kezra does a familiar, gesture, but it's stronger this time, and his eyes begin to glow as well. Ooh. But also, Sandor. What's your Eidolon's name?
Luca,
and Garn's eyes all begin to glow.
Ooh.
As I cast a true target.
Ha!
And I cast it on the invisible Hringar.
Okay,
all
right.
What this effectively means is all of us, all four of us, are under the effects of Sure Strike for this turn against him. Oh, and part,
I like it.
And
I
part
like
of it,
it
is... The attacker also ignores circumstance penalties to attack rolls and any flat checks required due to designated creatures being concealed or hidden. So you guys can guys can directly detect him for one attack.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Oh my gosh.
And that's one action.
That's amazing.
Oh my god. Yeah. I forgot that's a one action spell.
Oh my god.
One action spell.
All right. So two more whole actions. What are you gonna do, man?
I'm gonna fucking attack him. this is something with a spell attack roll.
Oh, gotcha.
I don't think I can see anyone but him, can I? From where I am now. I kind of see...
You can... Brigvin's there, but he's got some cover, so... depending on what you want to use, you might just take that into account there.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to pick Blazing Bolt, but... you know, I have a great line on him. I don't need...
Okay.
Fuck it. I'll use Ray of Frost. It's pretty powerful at this level.
Okay.
You have to cantrip, but whatever. I already blew a 7th level spell.
Okay.
Spell attack roll! All right, 15 on the first one.
Okay.
All right, so I'm going to take the 15, which will be a 36 to hit.
That is a hit. He had hit him in his gut.
Alright, that'll be 21 cold damage.
Okay. Alright. He goes, ah! That's all. okay. So, after Kezra illuminates this guy for you all, Sandor, it is your turn.
So, can we see this Hringar?
Yes.
Yeah, you can make anything that has an attack roll against him.
Yeah. I imagine because he's invisible, but because he's like there's like a light, and I imagine it's like the silhouette. You know, like if somebody's standing in front of like a floodlight or something like that. That's what I kind of imagine is sort of happening here.
Okay. Seeing this Scarlet Triad member.
Mm-hmm.
With this particular Hringar.
Yep.
Sandor also sees fucking blood. Jake, make me a basic fortitude save.
With the Hringar?
Yep.
That is gonna be... 43.
43. Okay. I also roll a spell attack. And with the bonus, since I get to roll twice, that is going to be... Holy shit. A 40.
This is 40, a 40 against the Hringar?
Yep.
That is a hit.
That is just a hit.
Yep.
Okay, Sandor just cast Disintegrate.
Oh.
Oh. Yay. Okay.
Oh.
Okay. So, and how much damage from the spell?
So, since it was a hit, you deal damage, and since it was a hit, you take one of your successes down one. So, since it would technically be a critical success, it is just a success.
Okay.
Goddamn. All right.
Hold on. I'm trying to figure out exactly.
Oh, just how much damage this beam. The disintegrate, like, deep green beam is... Oh, God, I love it.
it's the classic spell, my friend.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm pulling back my to, dice
like,
roller.
First edition or something.
Okay. So you will still be taking half damage, but this is a fuckload of damage.
Okay.
You will be taking 37 points of damage, and there is okay. No damage type. This is just damage.
Yeah, just straight. Okay. All right, so you shoot this beam out, it hits him, and he's like, I'll deal with you now. Is that the end of your turn?
I will cast shield on myself.
Okay. Good, because what happens is that this Hringar... all of a sudden grows large. And then he strikes out at you, Sandor, with a gnarly looking, you would know, corrosive whip.
Oh.
Yep.
So the growing large, uh-huh. So that means he occupies the four squares next to the east of Brigvin.
Yep.
Okay, and then him growing large, what kind of action was that? I'm just seeing if it'll trigger my reactive strike.
That's something that most Hringar just have.
Yeah. It's an innate thing that the like dark dwarves just do. Hmm. So he grows large, and this whip comes out at you, Sandor, and it's coming toward your face, and you felt this thing before.
Oh.
And I'll see you guys next time.
Bad thing's coming.
Gosh.
You guys wanna play another one?